La,
la, la,
la, la, la, la.
Ready? You feel good?
Go.
I see you got dressed up for the event.
I'll stand behind the table.
You look sharp. Cool. Hey, everybody. Thank you very much for spending some time with us today here at TechEd. Click. We are Scott Hunter and Scott Hanselman. This is my boss. He is one of the three Scotts between me and Guthrie. And we are collectively known as the Lesser Scots. Also, Scots the Lesser. It's like attorneys general.
I heard that Mary Jo Foley actually called us the Lesser Scots herself in her podcast this week.
This is a real thing. When we're in a meeting with Guthrie or another superior Scott, people will gesture towards us as a collective and say, well, what do the Lesser Scots think about that? It's become a thing now, and it's official, so welcome to us. One plug that I want to put in is, if you haven't seen it already, please do check out Azure Friday at friday.azure.com. It's a video podcast that I put together. They're 10-minute, small, no marketing, no fluff conversations with me and the people who built Azure. I basically figured Azure's hard to learn. It's going to be difficult for me to learn at all, so I'm just going to go and talk to the people, the men and women who built the thing, and say, hey, explain this to me. And then I figured I would film it at the same time. And you can get these up on the iTunes, Channel 9. You can subscribe to these. They work great. It's small how-to stuff every Friday. Check it out. And we've got about 100 episodes so far. So it's becoming a body of knowledge, right? Cool. We are going to talk to you about ASP.NET and web tools and juxtapose the two things, and about the current status of what's going on with Visual Studio 2013.2.
Which was just released today.
Released today. So if you've got 2013, you can update to 2013.2 today for free. We all know who the father of ASP.NET is, Scott Guthrie. He is not here. He is the great Scott. He has also been promoted. He is now an
EVP.
EVP. Is SVP, CVP, EVP?
He's now EVP.
He's an EVP. That's better than the other two.
Yes.
So he's living the dream right now. He's actually done a number of upgrades and improvements with the money that he's making now. So we're feeling pretty excited about what Scott's been accomplished. We're going to juxtapose a few things, and this is going to come out throughout the talk. There's the difference between ASP.NET, which is the runtime. You think of it right now as being in the GAC, in the Global Assembly Cache. We're going to maybe change your opinion about that. And then ASP.NET Web Tools. Sometimes we'll update Visual Studio with an update like 2012.2 was an update to ASP.NET.
Yeah.
And that updated web tools, but ASP.NET in the Global Assembly Cache didn't change. Other times, we'll ship updates to ASP.NET as NuGet packages, as optional packages that you can deploy or not deploy with your ASP.NET apps. All of this is a part of the one ASP.NET kind of philosophy that we've been adopting maybe for the last 2-3 years. It's been in process.
It's been in process. It shipped with VS 2013, though.
Yeah. And what one ASP.NET means is that for a while there was this kind of fighting, this infighting between web forms and MVC and kind of this East Coast, West Coast, Biggie, Tupac kind of thing where people were making each other feel bad about like, well, are you MVC or are you Web API? Oh, I do web forms and web pages. It's all part of ASP.NET. We're trying to come to a unified model where you can choose the thing that makes you happy. But the thing that makes you happy may also be some other project. It might be you. It might be an open source project. It might be ServiceStack.net or Nancy or Simple Web or any of a whole series of alternate views on what a web application should look like. All of those things are part of ASP.NET and should be pluggable.
The more important thing about one ASP.NET is instead of making that choice when you first start your application of which framework you're going to use, let's say you have a web form application and you decide you want to add some web API to it. You can now just right-click, say add web API, we'll add the web API. You can right-click, add MVC, add MVC. So the point is, you no longer have to be fearful that when you make a choice, when you start a file new project, that you've made the wrong choice.
Exactly.
And that you're stuck.
In the past, when you said file new project, you were given a choice of like 10 different flavors of ASP.NET application, and no matter which one you picked, it was wrong. And you would always have a sense of like, well, I'd like to have an MVC controller in my web forms app. Is that cool? Are we cool with that? And then you would hack together the web config and you'd show it to your boss and he'd go, I don't think Microsoft's going to support that. And then there was a project GUID inside of the CS Proj, and MVC projects were different projects than ASP.NET projects. All of that is gone. ASP.NET apps are ASP.NET apps. If you have a Web Forms app, you can right-click and say Add Controller. If you have an MVC app, you can add web pages. If you have web pages and you have a .aspx extension and you would like to have friendly URLs, you've got that. All of these things, all of these products in green here, living side by side, and a little bit later at the end of the talk, we'll show open source projects all living together in the same application. Another thing to point out is you may know who your local MVPs are. MVP program for a long time has been considered who is the loudest, or who is the bloggiest, or who writes the most books. And the idea of one becoming an MVP has been a really challenging goal for a lot of people, while at the same time, people who don't blog, don't write books, don't present at conferences are doing amazing stuff in open source. So we've changed the MVP program now, where someone can become an MVP based entirely on open source contributions. Literally, your commit log is your resume, and we've already had people like the Nancy.web. Andreas Hawkinson has become an MVP based on that as well. And we've got a whole bunch of new MVPs coming through. So if you don't feel like you're loud and giving blog posts and stuff, I want to make sure that everyone understands that open source contributions matter as much or more so as anything else that you could be doing to get the word out. Yeah? All right, let's look at some of the things that we've done and get a sense of the cadence about how things have been proceeding within ASP.NET world. Somewhere around February 2013, last year, we announced 2012.2. And that was an update to Visual Studio 2012 that graduated some interesting features from labs status, some fun editors, into here and marked the beginning of kind of the modern web era for Visual Studio. We included LESS and SAS support inside of Visual Studio. What else do we put in that? We'll have to look at the big old pile of bullets in a minute. 2013 came out, and we're continuing that cadence of about every 6 months, maybe every quarter, depends on what we're doing, to have updates to Visual Studio. And these are free updates, these .1, .2, .3 releases. And it's not just ASP.NET that's doing that. When 2013.2 came out today, we're going to continue that cadence. Now, we're doing a focus on what we like to call the modern web, and the modern web is Angular and Ember and Backbone and Underscore and noun.js. Just pick a noun. Just flip open the dictionary, pick a word, lawnchair.js. That's actually a popular JavaScript library. Who knew? Any noun. We're going to have continued support for these kinds of libraries on the client side. People keep asking us, sir, how come we don't just make our own library? Why do we not just write superscott.js? Why do we use the libraries from, like, you know, what's the Microsoft MVC library? Do we need to prescribe one?
We don't think so. The ones out there are so good that why, you know, if there's one out there that actually serves the purpose and has all the features that you would want, why would we just go and clone something?
Right. You don't necessarily need us to put a team together of people who think they're the smartest people in the room to go and write a library when we're competing effectively against the entire internet.
Right.
Right. So, like jQuery, right? There was a time when jQuery won. Like, it won the internet. Like, Oprah won the world. Like, it won the entire internet. And we're not going to write a competitor to jQuery.
No.
So it's unclear right now who's winning. Ember's popular. Angular's very popular. Maybe Angular's winning. We're going to support those libraries in our editor and in our project templates.
And I think we're going to talk later this week as well about, we think the same way about tooling as well. So if there's tools out there like Grunt and Bower that people are using, we would rather integrate those in and make them work better with Visual Studio than go create our clone of those things.
Right. Now, we haven't got code names yet for these things, but we've shown them to a couple of people who are pretty excited about them. And at this point, the Dalai Lama is pretty stoked. Future versions of ASP.NET I showed to my mother-in-law, and she was really, really impressed with some of the work that we had done. Now, of course, we're working really hard on this, and we need to stay focused. So if Hunter stops by, if my boss comes by the office, we need to make sure that we get out of his way very quickly.
I never can find anybody in the office. Every time I walk in an office,
We're working from home. Now, there's a balance here, because your IT department might let you update every couple of years. We have free updates, but then some people want to stay on the cutting edge. They want to see crazy new stuff. They want to see new experiments. That experiments is Web Essentials. That's our labs extension. It's like, you know, Gmail Labs, where it's an opt-in situation, and if it crashes, you just disable it and you move on with your life. These are sometimes rough, sometimes daily builds, but if they're awesome, we will graduate them. So this is where the Less editor started out. It was a labs, and then he said, that's great, everyone's using it, and then we graduated it. So if you want to be on the cutting edge, check out vswebessentials.com. It's open source. You can get involved. Right now it's run by Mads Christensen, but also with contributions from lots of other people.
And Mads is doing a talk on Wednesday where he'll go deep dive on this stuff.
Yep, and Mads is here, so definitely check out that talk on Wednesday.
I hope so, he's here. He's doing a session.
Pretty sure he's here. I saw him walking around.
This is kind of a recap of what we just shipped in October. So you can look at a lot of this is stuff that we've talked about in some of the intro slides here. So we've had this membership system in ASP.NET for since 2005, and we did a reboot of that because we wanted to support a lot of modern things. Like we want you to be able to log into an ASP.NET app using Google accounts, Microsoft accounts, Facebook accounts, Twitter accounts, whatever. Also, modern web applications do things like account verification via email. They support things like two-factor authentication, and we've built all those in. Some of that came in update two, which we'll talk about. And we moved our templates to something called Bootstrap. Scott's great at CSS. I'm not good at CSS. I'm just a table hacker. And Bootstrap is a great framework that lets me make my apps look good without having a lot of CSS skills. And I can even go grab a third-party template and add it to my app to style my app differently. One ASP.NET we kind of covered a second ago, and we'll do a demo of that. Azure SDK, 2013 was when we first added full support for things like looking at your websites, looking at mobile services, looking at storage. Pretty much every Azure main feature is in the Server Explorer. You can log into the Server Explorer. You should check it out. We're going to do a few demos of it today. For Web API and MVC, we added attribute routing, which is cool. That was actually open source contribution that we got from the community.
Right, in MVC now you do your routing in the global ASAX, and that means that you might be thinking about a controller and then you got to go and remember what your routes are. That brings your routing into the controller itself.
Exactly. Do the routing where you're working versus going and finding some complicated table in global ASAX.
And that's now in Web API and MVC in our march towards unification of those two APIs that we'll talk about tomorrow's talk.
Tomorrow, yeah. We had core support as well, which allows a JavaScript web page running on a different URL to call one of your web APIs. It's kind of important for web APIs. EF, we added a bunch of cool support for async. Async was a feature in .NET 4.5 with the await keyword, and now you can use the await keyword with Entity Framework, which if you're using ASP.NET, you should be doing this because it will make your applications go faster. We added stored proc support, so you can actually take an EF code first database now and say I want to use stored procs, and it'll actually go write the insert, update, and delete methods for you. It'll do that as part of a migration, and you can actually go and edit that code as part of the migration and write your own logic in there, so it does a lot of boilerplate for you.
And if I may, the async stuff can't be overstated how important that is.
It cannot be overstated.
Really, we've got async support in web forms and code behinds. You might find yourself in a situation often with like a large web forms app with a bunch of different grids that are all having to bind to a bunch of different things or some kind of a portal. Right now, you're going to make calls out to the database and calls out to web services and calls out to the file system, and all that's happening synchronously, and you're sitting there holding that request thread open, especially for long-running calls.
Well, I think what people don't realize, we have a demo that we run internally at Microsoft where we have a static page that has no code in it at all, no .NET code, no nothing. It's just a blank page with the markup. And we have a page that actually has a database. If I take a stress tool and throw the stress tool at that application, the database page will starve out the page with no code. So because each time we hit the database page, it basically goes and talks to the database, holds a thread, keeps a thread, and then the page that has no code in it gets starved out because there's no threads to support it anymore. If you put the await in, the starving goes away, both pages return at the same rate, and you have no problems.
Right, and this isn't necessarily background processing. Asynchrony and background processing are different things. The idea is that I'm about to do some I/O. I'm going to talk to the network, and I'm going to have a blocking call. Well, the thread that ASP.NET was handling that request on can be used. So we actually will pause that, give it back to the pool. I'm still waiting for the database to come back. We'll be handling requests and stuff database is back. Hey, I'm back. Okay, and we're going to pick that thread right where you left off and then return. User doesn't know, and the programmer doesn't know, because await and async makes it like that easy.
Exactly. And then finally, for Visual Studio, we added a new HTML editor, which we'll do some demos on today. The main point there is the CSS editor and the JavaScript editor, we made them extensible in VS 2012. Now with VS 2013, the HTML editor is extensible, which means Web Essentials, our playground, can actually work in the HTML editor as well. Mm-hmm. We added a feature called Browser Link, and we use that for doing live page refresh, and we'll do a demo later where you can basically run an app, make some changes in Visual Studio, and having to go and refresh your browser, you can just tell Visual Studio to push over to the browser, and the browser will refresh. It's also extensible, and we're going to show the extensibility by showing Web Essentials, where you can do a lot of crazy stuff here. Basically, there's a conduit between Visual Studio and your browser. They can talk back and forth to each other.
Well, don't give it all away now.
Okay.
Talk is cheap. Show me the code, right?
And we added support for AngularJS class IntelliSense. It's not on the slide, but we did Bootstrap IntelliSense as part of this effort as well, I think.
We absolutely did. So that's 2013. Now, today, we RTM 2013.2, and we'll just go over this briefly and get right into the demos. We'll have improvements in scaffolding. There's web form scaffolding. There's an amazing Roslyn thing that was released today in a CTP that we're going to take a look at. We've got improvements in SignalR for cross-platform. We've got Bootstrap scaffolding.
Let's call out web forms. We did a lot of work in web forms. Web Forms has scaffolding now, so you get the same scaffolding support that MVC and Web API have. Mm-hmm. We just introduced EF6 as part of that VS 2013 wave. We've added support with an EF6 data source control for Web Forms. We've added support for an EF6 dynamic data provider, so you can use dynamic data with Web Forms. And the Roslyn feature, which we'll demo a little bit later on, allows you to use the new Roslyn compilers and get the latest features. So I just want to call out that there's a lot of...
And you're going to show that demo in a demo,
We're
right?
going to show the Roslyn demos, yes.
Yeah. So really, really cool stuff. And then increasing support. There's a built-in JSON editor with Azure Tools. We get a PowerShell editor inside of Visual Studio. And also the Windows Phone emulator has been integrated into Web Tools, so you can control F5 and launch the Windows Phone, automatically debug your stuff on a mobile
device.
It
goes even further than that. When you launch the phone emulator, we actually launch the browser in the phone and go right to your application. So you can actually run your app right in the phone browser if you want.
Magical. Roslyn.
Yes.
Roslyn is the next generation open sourced C# and VB compiler. It is compiler as a service. This means that you can use this to compile stuff dynamically yourself, and we are using this. But what's great about Roslyn is that new language features, new things that are happening in C# can be tried out today. He's going to show you how you can plug this in today in the Visual Studio you have today. Try all new language features that aren't even shipped yet on, you know, C# 6 now?
Yes.
And then, hey, you know, I don't really like that. Hit disable, and you go back the way it was. And it all lights up. It's amazing. Great new code analysis tools, and it's all open source.
And the cool thing is we're releasing today on the NuGet gallery, we're releasing a code DOM provider for ASP.NET, which enables you to use this in the ASP.NET you're using today, whether you're using Razor files, ASPX files, ASCX files, if you've got code in an app code folder, all those things where we don't use the compiler on the disk, where ASP.NET compiles for you, that is all completely supported today as a pre-release package that we have. Another benefit of this as well, we had a customer that had a crazy app that had like thousands of pages and it had a startup performance problem. And we were able to cut that down by about 80% with Roslyn, because once Roslyn boots up, it compiles super, super fast because it's compiling into memory.
80%. That's pretty hot. So if you saw my talk earlier, we talked a little bit about those things, not writing to disk, doing things more in memory. Roslyn is the thing that makes that happen. And we'll talk even more about that tomorrow in our ASP.NET vNext talk.
Yeah.
Now, all of these things support Azure, and we continue to put in support for Azure. Azure can be a little bit confusing to some people. I'll give you a brief overview. This is kind of how I look at it. Remembering that everything starts with storage, and then there's VMs on top of that. Websites, my favorite thing, and where I run all my personal sites are on Azure websites, sits on top of that. So virtual machines are infrastructure as a service, and websites are platform as a service. So you hear people saying IaaS and PaaS, and those are confusing acronyms. So the way I look at it is like this. Websites, you can do those languages there on the upper left, and Azure handles the operating systems. Because I don't want to think about running Windows Update. You know, I don't have pets for a reason. I can't keep them alive. I don't have to water the dog or whatever. I'm not sure what's involved in keeping the dog alive, but I know it's a hassle. With a virtual machine, it's like a puppy. You have to maintain it. You have to run Windows Update on the puppy. You see how the analogy is breaking down. You have to manage it from the moment you say new virtual machine. It's basically like this. It's your first house. You buy the house, it's you manage the gutters, you redo the roof, you handle it. But I don't roll like that. I want a hotel room that I can trash every night and then just come back the next day and the hotel room is perfect. That's platform as a service. I don't want to think about that stuff. Make sense? I don't like running Windows Update because you know how you're typing, you're doing your thing, and Windows Update pops up, and your hand's coming down to press Enter, and then Windows Update's coming down at the same time. And it's like, well, I'm going to reset, but gravity's already pulling your hand down. It's like, no. And the restart button is going to pop. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And then when you hit that, you know the only thing that can stop? Switch to your computer. The only thing that can stop a Windows machine. Windows is a very powerful operating system. The only thing that can stop Windows is a dirty notepad. That stops Windows. So what you have to do is like, Windows is shutting down. Open up Notepad, type some stuff in it, and then boom. And the Notepad says, not responding. Did you see my Halloween? Speaking of not responding, did you see my Halloween costume last year?
No.
I went as Microsoft Outlook. I set up a curtain, like a shower curtain, and I had kind of an opaque sheet of plastic in front of me, and it just said, not responding. And I would just walk around and not talk to people. I'm Outlook. No? Okay.
I actually like that. That means my email was done.
You like that? All right. Let's stop talking and see some demos, shall we?
You want to talk about the link first?
You want to talk about the link? What link? Oh, that link.
That link.
Oh, that's a Bitly bundle. So you know how people are always frantically typing stuff down? I want the slides. I want the details. I want everything. Just take a picture of that Bitly bundle right there. Bitly TechEd 2014 Web Tools. It is a bundle. It's a Bitly of Bitlys. Bet you didn't know you could do that. And we can edit it. So we're adding everything that we're talking about is in that Bitly bundle. All the phones come up.
Yeah, so everything we're going to show you today, if you want links to download any of the bits that we show today,
it's
they're part of this
there.
Link. And so grab that, and you'll be able to find all the stuff that we're going to demo today.
I'm glad we made that link.
So.
All right, magical.
Okay, so as Scott was saying, we went away from, this was like the old ASP.NET. And, you know, you had, like, 8 choices, and then you had 8 more choices.
Yeah,
it's kind of confusing.
Well, and again, once you picked one, that was your choice.
You were done. It was not you. If you put anything else in, you're going to edit the project file by hand.
Or messing around in the web config.
So we'll create a project here. And once again, this is one ASP.NET, so I've got all these technologies I can choose. If I want, I can check multiples of these guys. If I forget to check one, I can go and add it later anyways. We took authentication and broke it out as well. You can have none. You can have individual where we actually put your users in a database in your application. You can do organizational if you want to use Active Directory. It also supports Microsoft Azure Active Directory as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard for me to say now. And there's this new option that shows up as part of Update 2. I guess he's going to zoom in, which is Host in Cloud. And people, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you get 10 free Azure websites when you sign up on the website. So if you want, you can actually check this box. It's checked by default, and we'll create a dev test environment for you in the cloud, and I'll do some demos of what you can do there. It's got website support, which is great. Websites is kind of like a PaaS solution. Everything's taken care of for you. We patch the machine. The machine's all put together.
Yep.
If you're a nuts and bolts person and want to actually get and own the machine and be able to remote desktop it, you can also drop this drop down and
this
select
is new.
A virtual machine.
This is new. You're saying file new website. You can pick virtual machine. We'll put IIS on it. We'll configure web deploy, which is historically hard to set up, and you will be able to do a straight web deploy the way you could before, but then you can remote into that machine and install whatever kind of crazy legacy comm stuff that you need to install for your work. So you have the choice of your first house or a hotel room, same dialogue, same deployment experience.
The benefit of doing it through file new right now is we actually take that virtual machine, we install IIS on it for you automatically, we install ASP.NET on it, we put the debugger on it for you,
yep, set up
and
debugger.
We put MS Deploy on it.
And we give you PowerShell scripts to go and deploy
that.
We'll
show
so
that.
We'll actually create PowerShell scripts, so then you can now right-click on them and deploy from PowerShell. So that makes deploy.bat or deploy.ps1.
So I'll create my app here.
Happen. You like that? One guy was like, yeah, I liked it. No. Stop. Stop. What's wrong
with
you?
Well, there's more. There's actually more here.
It's pretty good, actually. And in the process here, we put in a PowerShell system. What's it doing down there? Create publish settings?
It's actually creating the...
I love the indefinite progress bar.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite progress bars. So let's look at the PowerShell.
So as we were saying, these are PowerShell files. And if I open one of these up, you'll see that we now have PowerShell support in Visual Studio.
And then you can right-click on that and open it up in the IOC and manage it and do it any way you want. And it also introduces you really nicely to the Azure SDK and how those things work as well.
But the premise here was, I've never published a production site out of Visual Studio. I probably never would. Why would my customers? And so the idea is, we're just going to give you the scripts. We're going to write them for you. You can modify them to your heart's content. In the next update that we have coming for the Azure SDK, we plan to take this a step further, where right now, if you do publish inside of Visual Studio, it still does our publish model.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to let you choose, do you want to use the scripts, or do you want to let us do it for you?
Exactly.
So you'll be able to run the scripts right from publish in Azure.
Yeah, publish from VS is nice if you're doing some dev, but when it comes time to be legit, you shouldn't be publishing your company's production website on Fred's laptop.
So because of this, we fill all your publish information out. It's ready to go. I just press the publish button, and we'll start publishing ourselves up to Azure. And you'll see it's pretty quick. Bingo. When we first started working on this stuff a few years ago, this was like a 15-minute process, and we've got it down to pretty fast pace now.
20, 30 seconds there.
Yeah. And that's on this internet that's running here.
Yes, over the high-quality internet that you get at the hotel here.
So the next thing is, if you're actually running an app and you start running it in the cloud, how do you do things like tracing and debugging? And let's drill in here, and I'll look here and go and open up the CodeBehind file. And let's just add some tracing logic here. System.diagnostics, trace.
It's so adorable when managers
trace warning.
Code. You're a hunt and peck coder, sir.
Let's write some. Thank you, Scott.
He's not really actually typing. I recorded this earlier. He's just going like that, and it looks like this is actually typing.
I'm going to republish, and when I republish, I'm going to make a small change here as well. I'm going to go and change this from release to debug. And I'll show you why I want to do that. So it's republished.
Oh, it was a release deployment before.
It was a release. By default, we do a release deployment. So
okay.
Now we're running up in the cloud again. And for fun, I'll go over to this about page and hit this about page a few times.
Okay.
But let's look at the Server Explorer integration that we have over here. So let me slide this out. And let's do a refresh.
And this is going and making a call out to the RESTful services that part of Azure. When you do something in the Azure portal, it calls a back-end REST service. When you do something at the command line in PowerShell, it calls the same service. So all of these things you're doing, whether you do them in Azure in the portal, in Visual Studio, in PowerShell, in Node.js, or on a Mac, they all call the same thing. So if there's something that he's doing that you don't like clicking on, automate it. All of these things can. We've even got a .NET management API now. So your NUnit or XUnit tests, your continuous integration systems can use .NET to call automate Azure. So you can fire these websites up, do everything he's doing, test it, and then tear it down.
Right. I'm going to actually go to the configuration options here. I right-click and click configuration, and I can now have a bunch of options. I don't have to go to the portal to mess with this stuff. I can do it right here in Visual Studio. I'm going to turn warnings on, and I'm going to save that to the cloud. So I've just modified my settings in the portal. And now what's cool is I can right-click on my node now, and I can say, I want to see streaming logs.
Okay. Let me zoom in on that a little bit for you, if you don't mind.
I can zoom myself, sir.
You can zoom? Are you okay to zoom?
I can do
that.
Let me zoom back out. And let's go and hit that about page. And you can see, as I hit the about page,
thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Why would you say that about yourself?
It's all Scott's. That's great. So I can do tracing. I can see tracing live in Visual Studio. The next thing is, what if I have a bug in my application? Well, we added a new feature as well in October where I can right-click over here, and I can say attach debugger. And so what will happen, the first time I do this, it'll take about 15, 20 seconds, 25 seconds. We actually go out to the Azure portal and reconfigure your site to support debugging. The cool thing is this is pretty amazing. Azure Websites is running in hosted environments, and so we're actually attaching a debugger just to your instance. We're securing it where only you can see your instance of the application in the cloud. And now that it's there.
And this only, actually, that pause there, that 15 seconds, that only happens once. Once that's been set up, then you're able
to.
Done.
The next time you do it, it's a 3 or 4 second connection just to wire the debugger up.
I think this is really nice for devs who don't necessarily have full admin on their machines, or they don't necessarily have IIS on their boxes, or they want to do something crazy, fire up 15 or 20 different sites and test them all different ways, and then tear them down, and you spend a buck doing
it. We can go right back over here, and I can put a breakpoint in here.
All right.
And
so you're on live Azure, and then boom, breakpoint in production on Azure. So that's pretty cool.
And full access to memory, full access to the whole thing. Live in the cloud. I'm going to be aspirational and say our hope is for the next Azure SDK is to actually make F5 and Control F5 work directly in the cloud automatically without all the attached debugger kind of semantics.
Yeah, I just noticed this. How come we're not using this, by the way? Sir?
I don't know what that TV is for.
It's like a Surface, right? Is this a Surface?
You've got the screensaver on now.
It's the new Surface.
Let me close a few files out here, and I want to show something here real quick. So I'm going to go to my models folder here, and I'm going to add a new database. Add a class here. Call it product.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. And
I usually fill the empty space with patter.
Yes, I'm not as skilled as you.
Oh. So a couple of times ago, we gave this talk, a little different version of this talk at Build, and in the reviews, someone put down, I don't think they like each other very much. We got angry Scott today. Like, no, this is pretty much our daily interaction. He's like a grandfather to me, and we're the same age.
I'm glad it's review time, Scott. So something that we did as part of the update that came out today is we added WebForm scaffolding is a feature that you can download and install. And there's a cool thing that I'm not even sure Scott's aware of. There's this link here at the bottom, which is basically click and find more scaffolding. So scaffolding is now pluggable. If I click over here, it'll actually bring the gallery up. And
yeah,
you can look and take
a
look.
I did not know that.
So
that is some wacky stuff. I had no idea. That is interesting because before, this is important, this is not going to make some people happy. If you've been a fan of scaffolding in the past, it was done in PowerShell. It was put together with PowerShell and Dreams. And it effectively was an orchestration where we would go and automate Visual Studio. Now, while it was really powerful, it wasn't very extensible, and it wasn't very robust. If something went wrong, then you'd find your application in a state that was really not ready. So we've rewritten scaffolding and made it a first-class thing. He noticed that he said, add scaffolded item. And then this is now a VizX. And that WebForm scaffolding that he's showing here is fully open source. So if you can make your own scaffolding, using that
and
as
our,
an example.
Our hope is that partners like the control vendors and such out there will actually go and build scaffolds for their products so you get first-class support for their products right in Visual Studio.
That would be great, like add new Telerik page or something like that.
So I selected that product model. I said create a new context, use a master page, and I'll just click add here.
Okay.
And once again, we're going to show that we can actually now scaffold WebForm.
And now, is this using code DOM to do this manipulation? How is it doing this? It's not PowerShell anymore.
It's code. It's actually using code. So
okay.
We had a scaffolder that you and Steve Sanderson wrote years and years ago that was basically PowerShell. The difference between this and that is this is meant to be redundant. So if it breaks something in your app, it'll roll itself back and not leave your app in a broken state. It does a lot more checking than you guys would have had in your...
And the source code for this scaffolder, which is now in beta, the WebForm scaffolder, and of course we already have Web API and MVC and various versions of that, is all up on GitHub and in that bit.ly link that we gave you guys.
So you'll notice that I now have a product folder in here, and inside of that I've got a default ASPX and an insert, edit, and delete page.
Now we're showing web forms, but I want to make sure you're clear that this is across the things. I could go from this web forms app and then scaffold out web API for the same objects. It's all one ASP.NET, right? I make an entity framework database, maybe a simple one like he did, maybe a complicated one, then make some pages on it, maybe in MVC, maybe in web forms. Then I could go and make an API on them talking to the same context. It all fits together. All right. And this is, of course, using Bootstrap, so it's lovely looking by default.
Yeah, and other cool stuff is if I do something here, like put goofy text down here, I do an insert. Ooh. This is actually from Chrome.
That's new.
This is from Chrome.
So that, is that HTML5?
Yes, it is. So if I inspect the element and we zoom in here. Oops. Where did I lose it at?
Zoom out. Harder than it looks.
Let's inspect again.
You let me know when you need help.
You're killing me, Scott. type equal number down here. That's where the magic happens there. So because the type equals number there, and this happens, once again, everything we're showing, like the scaffolding, the web forms, it doesn't really matter what technology you're on. If you're on MVC, you're on web forms, we do the same thing everywhere. The HTML5 stuff was great. Mobile browsers supported it first, but now we're starting to see desktop browsers supported as well. So you're getting the validation right from the browser.
So in this example, we've got web forms and HTML5 and a modern browser, and it did the right thing.
Yes.
Cool.
Okay, I'll show one more Azure feature real quick. Let me take my project and I'll add one more thing to it. Where am I?
You're only running 8 Visual Studios?
Only 8 today. I'm going to take my solution here and I'm going to add a console application to it as well. So let's go here and we'll add a new project.
If you haven't got 2013 yet, you'll find, and this has been my experience as well, he's running this on a pretty midline ultrabook. This is an X1 Carbon Touch. He's got 8 versions of Visual, 8 copies of Visual Studio running. A lot of work was done on performance and memory pressure. If you've got an SSD and 8 gigs of RAM, which is what he's got here, you're going to have a pretty nice experience. We're not bringing in beefy machines. He's not remoted into some giant thing. He's having a pretty good development experience on a 3-pound laptop. So if you're not on 2013, maybe you're still on 2010 or 2012 at work, that's a good reason to maybe think about moving forward. And additionally, you can go file new project on 2013 and you can choose all the way back to .NET 2. So you don't necessarily have to go .NET 4. You can still maintain and build your older applications if you like.
So this, I've just written a stupid console application that basically loops around, writing a number out, and sleeps for 5 seconds. And what I want to show is, Azure Websites was great when I showed that. I can put my website there, but if you're really building a real web application, you might need to have something running in the background, potentially processing and sending emails and stuff like that. And so
I see. This is a long-running task.
And gotcha. So I want to show one of the new features that we introduced a few months ago is the ability to have these kinds of tasks associated with your website in Azure. So what I can do, this is some tooling that some of the guys on the team wrote as well. I can right-click on my web project now. And I can say add.
See, I used to do this with queue user work item, which is not what you're supposed to do. And again, every thread that's doing that is starving the web application.
Well, the problem with the queue work item is your ASP.NET application can be killed any time by the host. And so if you have something that takes like 5 minutes, let's say you're generating a PDF. If we go and kill the app domain, you don't know where were you in that PDF generation. If you run this thing outside of ASP.NET, you're not going to have those problems. So I'm going to say I want an Azure web job here. I'm going to associate my console app, press OK, and now these things are associated together. If I publish my application back up to Azure again.
So think about all the different things you could do with this. Squishing PNGs that the user had uploaded, right? Morg threads that go through logs, maybe zip up log files and tidy up. All these different kinds of things that have something to do with your app but have nothing to do with the visiting of your app by other people. I've even seen people put in horrible hacks in ASP.NET where they say, on the 1,000th hit, check to see if I need to do anything and then spin off a thread, and then that person has a lousy experience. So web jobs are, background jobs for ASP.NET in Azure.
So now what's cool is I can come over to my portal and I can find this website that we have here, and I can drill into it. I can go to the web jobs tab, and it's going to be aware that I actually published that console application up with my app. And you can see it's actually in the process of initializing my console app. It just started running.
There it is.
Now, what's cool is I can click this link over here, which will take me to a portal that lets me look and see the status of my web job.
These are called Azure Site Extensions, and you're going to see more about those soon, the idea of an extension gallery. add-ons, kind of sidecars for your website. So this is a website running within the context of there.
And now I can see the console screen from my console application running in the portal.
So all he did was write a console app, and it's up here. So doing things like those, we talked about squishing images, background jobs, really, really stupid easy.
Cool.
Cool, man.
So let me switch VSS for you.
You are a worthy competitor. I'm going to screw something up now. You did a lovely job.
Well, so what are you going to do next?
We have 35 minutes.
You want to do EF Data Source?
I'll do this briefly. I don't want to over... I mean, I started out as a web forms person. I don't want to over web forms. But in this example here, we've got a web forms app, and this is new. We've got a, you know, got a grid view, and we've got a details view. And this is kind of stuff for quick admin sites. Sometimes I'll use web forms. I'll do my front end and MVC. I'll do my API and web API. And then I'll need some CRUD. I want to bang out a nice little admin site. Here, we've got an entity data source pointing to our model. And then everyone else is talking to this data source. We've plugged in details and grid view to this.
Well, the point about this entity data source, this is an entity data source for EF6.
EF6, so, which includes all sorts of new features, including code first.
Code first, all that kind of stuff. It's just proving that we continue to innovate in the web form space as well, making sure that whatever technologies and features we build, we add support for web forms as well.
Right.
So there you go.
So it's ugly because I didn't go and put all
we
of
didn't
the
bootstrap
stuff on top of it. But I can still do stuff like this. And these things are still a little bit hard in MVC, doing like inline edits and updates within a grid. So I would do like my admin site in this, or complicated interactions, and then I'd push it into the same location that is going to be pulled from my web API.
Yeah.
So that's EF6 support within web forms right there, entity data source. And it plugs into the same controls and any other control you might want to use, not just the ones that are out of the
box. We've added support for dynamic data as well, so it's all the technologies are in there.
So that's yummy. Let's go check out this one here. All right. So here is an application that I'm going to go ahead and run, and it will look familiar because it's the same one that we always run. And right here, there's a little ghost at the bottom of the screen there. Let me zoom down at the bottom. See that ghost? That's Web Essentials injecting HTML in a div, injecting it into my page right there. Now, if I want to change this code right here, I want to change ASP.NET, I might go and hit Control-Shift-F and try to find it and do a text search. I might know where it is, but it could be in a master page or a regular page or a partial within something.
Who knows where?
What I can do here is I can hover and hit Inspect, and then as I'm hovering, it's actually sending a message from the browser back over. Look at this here. If I'm going to actually pick one of the little hamburger deals, and it's actually, can you see that? It's specifically right there, highlighting the exact location of the thing right there. So now I can go back over here and then start making that change. So I can go and say that and then hit save. Now I would then go back over here and hit refresh, but I could also note that I have a browser connected. Visual Studio knows that I have a browser connected right here. Now that's Chrome. What if I went and brought up IE, put him down here, and then now they're both connected. I'm going to hit refresh and update both of them. All of them, N number of browsers, including mobile devices, mobile emulators, and all that kind of stuff. And that's cool. Pause for effect. That's fine. But it's not amazingly cool. You know, it's not like deeply, profoundly cool. So I'll hit Control again, and I'll instead hit Design this time. And I'm going to actually click in the browser here and then just start typing.
You should show that if you go back to Visual Studio, all the undo buffers have been updated the same way as they would if you typed in
so
Visual Studio.
So I'm hitting undo now. I can actually undo that. We didn't just paste that in there. I can go back and put it back the way it was, and then hit refresh, and it's updated ever. And that's kind of cool, but that's not like deeply cool, right? They were, I'm too tired to clap. So you know how you always go into F12 tools, and then you get it exactly the way you want it? And then you're like, don't move. Okay, it's perfect. You know, take a screenshot, something. you can't view a view source, the DOM is exactly the way you want it, and then you got to go back over into the source and figure out, okay, well, where did that come from, da-da-da-da-da.
Or you paste it in a notepad all the time. And
what if I could go over here and do something like change the background color to red or blue in the browser, or salmon, and it's changing over here at the same time. So the DOM is staying in sync. Which is cool. And then, of course, remember that we have multiple browsers attached, so it's happening everywhere. So then I could go back over here, and then I could hit Control J, and then pull this down, and then I could also click on this tiny Legend of Zelda sword right here, and then I could go and pick a color from somewhere else on the screen, like any of the rich colors in the Visual Studio spectrum of available colors, like gray or dark gray or bone.
Gray.
Then save that and then send that across to everybody. Is that cool? All right. The way that that's working is if I go down to the bottom here, note the port number there, 45290. Note the port number up here. We are hosting another little kind of web server in Visual Studio. IIS served the page, but Visual Studio has a highway, a freeway between the browser and Visual Studio using SignalR. It's using WebSockets and SignalR technology, real-time technology. So they've built a bridge there. Yep. Now the refresh feature, where we pushed a refresh out, that's free. You get that. You have that now. You may not even know you have that. What you don't necessarily have is the design and inspect. Those are plugins. You can write plugins yourself. So if you're like, whoa, I could do this, I could do that, you can do that. Those were added with VS Web Essentials. So if you install VS Web Essentials, those features light up and you just get that stuff.
Our plan is moving forward to take those features from Web Essentials and move them into VS proper the next time we have a cycle of VS.
Exactly. And those features are going to graduate.
Right.
For lack of a better word.
They're too good not to graduate.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. So, cool. So let's go over here, and let's get rid of this entire page, because that's always a good idea in a demo to go off script, like there's a script. And if I can just type HTML5 and then hit the tab key. Let me do that again. I want to get rid of this. I'm going to just type HTML5 tab, and then I'm going to go down here, and I'm going to think about what I need. I need a UL and an LI, but I need five of those. And within that, I'm going to need...
Need some lorem ipsum?
I'm going to need some lorem ipsum text. Is it lorem?
I think it's lorem.
There you go. But maybe what I really want is an LI with a UL with an LI, and I need three of those, and then I need an A. And then within that, I need some lorem text, but I only need two.
The link to finding out all the ways you can do this, one of those links in that bit.ly link that we showed earlier, and we'll show again when we're done, shows you where a page you can go to on the internet and find out about all the crazy ones of these you can do.
Doot, doot, boom. Oh, well, there you go. So that was called Zen coding, or Emmet.
Emmet.
Emmet. And you already know this because it's basically reverse CSS selectors. Additionally, I could go and say like these TDs like this, right? And then within that an A, but then I could go up a stack and then start again. So I popped. So it's exactly what you think. This way, the greater than goes that way, the little hat takes you up a stack, and you can go and make an incredibly complicated thing. Now, what's cool about this, though, is that I can then say, remember, reverse CSS selectors, maybe add hash foo dot bar. Hash foo, that was an ID, dot bar, that was that, right? So now I know about Bootstrap. Maybe I could say button large.
Yeah.
Make sense? Or I've got a thing called foo with another thing called bar, and then ULs beneath that. So
Cool.
It's pretty cool. That's Zen coding. You get that also for free with Visual Studio Web Essentials, which is the new hotness, in case you hadn't heard. And then undo. Boom. Isn't that nice? Cool. Now, sometimes there are people at work, older people, maybe your boss, and they look at like the... We can help these people. So, I'm going to make this small, okay? Don't worry about seeing the text. And I'm going to go and start at the base level here, and I'm going to hit Alt 1.
Yep.
And then again, and then again, and then again, and then again. Let's expand selection. Alt 2 goes the other way. When I'm going to grab a hold of one of these, then I'm going to go and say Alt Up. Oh. Now, there's a neckbeard in the audience who's like, I had this in Vim 40 years ago. Remember that neckbeards is a gender non-specific term requiring neither a neck nor a beard. Right? If you use VI or Vim or Emacs, you're a neckbeard automatically.
And that required a Control-D with a Shift-A and a function 1.
It's like Control, yeah, Control-K. Yeah. I know that F7 prints in WordPerfect, though. I don't know why I still know that, but yeah. So that's pretty cool. You can even like freak out your friends and neighbors by just going like this. That is holding down Alt and going like that. And that's nice for working on editing big groups of stuff. Let me see what else. Oh, there's another one. Yeah, actually, so we've got some helpers too. If I said select this here, and then I think it is, which surround with? Web Essentials. You remember how to do surround
the one
with?
The one I think is Alt Shift W is what I would.
Alt Shift W, because I don't have a head for this stuff.
So Alt Shift W.
Oh.
And now.
Yeah, and so then it wrapped. The W is for wrap. So it took that thing and then it wrapped.
Wraps
and
it.
Then, of course, the website is then ugly, and then I can go and say, format document, and then I make it pretty again. So that's cool. Ooh, but images. Do we have any images here?
Yeah.
Do I want to look for images?
Yeah, go to pictures. Yeah, there's some in pictures. Actually.
Have you used this machine before?
It's clean. If you want images, grab some images, I believe.
If only there were an interconnected web of computers that I could query somehow.
In fact, there's an image called Hanselman.
Oh, Lord. Is this an appropriate image of me?
It's appropriate. Oh. It's when you had more hair.
When I had more hair. So yesterday. So let's go to Web Essentials here. I'm going to pull open the Solution Explorer. We're going to pick up.
Just drag the image right into the page.
You want to just drag it into the page?
See if you can drag it into the page.
No, it's going to be ... No, we don't want to do that.
Paste it in the page.
I know. I've used a computer before.
No, I mean, it's a new feature that might be in the Web Essentials that we have. Try pasting it in the page.
We're going to paste it? Okay. Copy paste.
This might not work. This is off script. No. We don't have the newest bits.
So you want it to just work?
Mats has new bits where when you actually paste an image into the editor,
ooh,
it actually copies the image to the images folder and puts a link in the page for you automatically. I saw this on Sunday at a pre-conference.
Sassy.
So we don't have that build yet, obviously.
I love that.
Look at that.
I just stepped in a pile of sassy. All right, let's go over here and let's drag this image right there, right? And I can hover over it.
That's a new feature.
Which is nice. And also see Tiny Scott over here. I can hit Control period.
Or just hit the chevron that shows up as well.
If you can't ever hit the chevron. This is my experience hitting that chevron.
Mine too.
Yeah. It runs away. I just Control dot. I'm not good with hotkeys. I don't like watching demos where someone's like hotkey hotkey tappity tappity, right? I know Control comma, Control dot. And that's basically it. And then if I have a question, I hold down Alt and I start clicking on stuff. Usually that'll get me the code that I need. Otherwise, I just go to Stack Overflow and then copy-paste it directly into production. So then I can hit that. Now, the great thing about this is these are features that you can use to tell your boss things took longer than they really did. I'm going to have to go through this entire page and add height and width attributes for everything. I'm probably going to have to work from home to accomplish that. So, actually, I met this guy recently, a couple days ago here. He said he was doing a startup. And he's like, we got a startup, and I'm doing stuff all over. I got offices all over the world. And I was like, man, don't tell me Panera Bread is not your remote office all over the world, right? You can't say, I go to Starbucks, and that's my home office. But, yeah, he works from home. This encode in Base 64.
Yeah, if you want to inline the image in your page.
Yeah, so we've inlined that image now. I'll prove it to you.
It is great for high performance websites. If you're doing like thumbnailing and stuff like that in a page.
To prove that it's real, I see an error here. Let me fix that. This is like a regular expression. I can just see. It's like the Matrix.
Your Matrix, I was going to say.
Exactly, you
just see the bits in your head.
Yeah, exactly. Now, hover over, it comes back. So this is real. But that's cool, but that's not deeply cool. What if I took, do you have any better images, man?
Nah, I've got the responsive image, which is a nice, big, pretty image.
I want a little tiny image.
I don't have any little ones.
Well, that's disappointing, sir. What am I going to do? If only Windows shipped a paint application that I could somehow use to make a bunch of crap real quick. Pixels, 100, 100, boom, red, paint, he's getting paint, and he's on Windows 8, doing stuff in blue, what's hell's going on, I don't even know, that's probably green, why is he talking to himself, and images, he's colorblind. These are gray.
Okay.
You know what a sprite is? Check this out, friends. Sprites are when you have a bunch of images and you want to put them together into one image. That way you bring the one image down. You only pay for the HTTP call once. Sometimes you have little tiny images like toolbars and toolbox buttons and stuff like that, where the header for the HTTP request is actually larger than the image itself. We'll go then and generate the CSS that you need, and then you can go into your application, go and say div.green, and then that'll show up and that'll be the image.
Mads has a talk this week called ASP.NET and Performance.
It's
and he's
ridiculous.
Going to be showing a lot of the this type of stuff in that,
yep.
And detailing how to make your application.
All this stuff, and it'll even go and squish them.
Yes.
So that's Web Essentials. It's yummy. It's wonderful. Let's go and dig into Roslyn.
So at Build, we showed Roslyn for the first time. We had some slides earlier that showed Roslyn is the future of the C# and VB compilers. They've basically been brought out into a DLL that you can actually use and call yourself. And they released a preview of this at Build. And the preview ends up being pretty cool from the standpoint, if you go install the preview, it seems not to hurt your machine too bad.
That seems to be a theme. Because just to be serious, right? In the past, we've been afraid to install some stuff.
I was afraid to install some of this stuff as well. So notice I've got the Roslyn preview installed on my machine. And what happens is when you install the preview, it replaces the C# compiler and the VB compiler that you have on disk.
Which
sounds scary. Now what's cool, if I want to turn it back off and go back to the compilers that are on the disk, I can just press this disable button and it'll disable it and I'm back to good. If I want to turn it back on, I can just re-enable it. So it really seems to be something that's not going to hurt your machine if you want to try it.
Destructive. Now that's the compiler side, so that's your code behind, your controllers, your models, anything that's a .cs or a .vb, right? But
so,
CSHTMLs and ASPXs aren't.
Correct. So the way it works is when you do Control-Alt-B and build in Visual Studio, we actually, as part of the build step, we build your CS files. There's a variety of files that we build. There's other files like ASPX, Razor files, anything in the app code folder that gets built on the fly when it's accessed for the first time in your application. And the way that works is something we have something called a code DOM in ASP.NET. Now what's cool is we just released a NuGet package today, let's bring this up here, that enables Roslyn to work in an ASP.NET application today. So you can try ASP.NET today. Let me just go down here. Here we go.
Code DOM providers.
Code DOM providers for .NET.
code DOM, just like a DOM in the browser that represents a tree of your languages. This is what we do. We go and we build that all up. So all dynamically compiled things as ASPX, ASCX, CSHTML, stuff like that, Razor Pages. So there's a bunch of new stuff coming out with C#, right in there, 6, all sorts of new features to make the language cleaner.
Yeah, so you can see all this does is takes your ASP.NET application, adds a line to webconfig where it says system.codedom, and adds the compiler into your application. So this is not invasive either. You can uninstall the NuGet package, you go back to normal.
Yep, and this is a web forms app as well.
Now what's cool is I've got this app today that returns a customer. So I've got this customer object, it's got a private string, first and last. They're initialized in the constructor, and then I have getters for them.
Yep.
And that's great. Let's go over.
It's a little repetitive.
It's kind of boring. And I've got a web form page that basically news one of these up and displays it. Nothing crazy here.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, so this is not special.
Not special.
Okay.
Now, what's cool is I can switch back over here, and I'll comment this out.
Okay, boring.
And I'll comment the C# 6 way of doing this.
Ooh. Okay, so hang on. So you just got rid of the private, because the repetitive stuff. You had the private field and then the public getter setter and all that kind of stuff, plus the automatic setting of that property as well.
Correct. And now I've got it. Well, you can see I've got a getter, and on properties that have a getter, I can now initialize them in the getter, in the code. So single line of code does all that.
Is it bad that there's a squiggly there?
It is bad there's a squiggly there. So let's go see in, I forget, did I have it enabled or disabled? It looks like I have it enabled.
Does it compile?
Let's compile it, see what it does.
So right now it looks like the compiler works fine, but the editor is confused. Oh, or you're just a bad programmer.
I'm a bad programmer.
So you have an extra squiggly. I'll let you find it. You just have a, you probably go up to the top.
No, it's probably down.
I think that? Maybe an extra one. Add a couple more squigglies.
There we go.
Just add 4 or 5 squigglies. You good?
Should be good, yeah. And the cool thing here is we're showing Roslyn in existing ASP.NET today. You don't have to, Roslyn's going to be officially as part of the next version of Visual Studio, but the preview's out there today. You can use it today. We have full support for it in ASP.NET today.
So this is C# 6 preview stuff. You can read about these on that team blog. You can go look at your code now, even a web forms application, and possibly take, in this case, 15, 20 lines of code, turn it into 2 or 3. Look at the way that you're making your POCO objects, your plain old CLR objects, some of the cool features. You might be able to change your application today and be ready when Roslyn comes out.
Yeah, there's a ton of other features. The links in our bit.ly link also have a reference to all the features that you can actually try in C# 6.
Magical. You'll notice a theme here. It's about pluggability. It's about choice. You should be able to try something out in a way that doesn't scare you or damage things, whether it be Web Essentials features or swapping out the entire compiler subsystem for either or both of C# and VB files or your dynamic files. If it doesn't work, you just disable it and you move on with your life. Is that cool? All right.
We have 11 minutes.
We have 11 minutes. Tiny, tiny applause. Back in the day, man, back in the day of Calm, people were, you type red server 32, and people were like, oh, that's amazing, oh, you're the best. Nobody anymore, right? If I don't build an, if I file new company, then no one is impressed. It's just a tragedy. We've got a products controller here. This is Web API. And in this example, I'm going to do a get, and I can pull back some products and get products. We've seen this kind of stuff before. It's not really very exciting. But one of the things we've got that you may have heard about is the ability to do inspect and look at these controllers, these Web API controllers, and generate a help page. You can ask about the services.
If you're going to build an API, you have to have some way for people to find out how to call it.
Right.
Especially in your organization.
So I can go here and say /help, and there is generated docs. I don't know why there's no documentation, because we didn't write it. That documentation would come from attributes on the thing. I'm just teasing
him.
But each one of these, then, you can then click on, look at this, And you're getting exactly what that takes, a sample of what that looks like, and if you want, a tester where you can go and call these things yourself. So we can introspect into this and build complete docs, online docs for your web APIs, which is cool. But sometimes you're off doing things like Postman, right? Postman is a, where's Postman here, dude?
Okay, I'm going to the second page.
You got enough stuff here?
Lots of stuff.
Yeah. I see that Postman's on the second page. And Postman is a really great REST client. It's just a little lightweight, you know, pusher of stuff. I can go and type these things in. It's kind of like Fiddler, but this is really focused on web APIs, and it has this feature where I can go and say, I want a collection, and import a collection. And a collection is a JSON file that describes the shape of my API. Now, we have that code in the help system where I can generate my help. What if I could go and generate that as well? So we've got a Postman controller, and Postman controller goes in, spins through for each API and the API descriptions, and it goes and generates a nice Postman request in a shape of JSON. There's what a Postman request looks like.
You can see it's using system web HTTP description, so it's using some of the stuff we use to build a help page.
That's exactly right. This is the help page expressed as JSON in a way that makes Postman happy. Postman looks like this, API/Postman. Okay, there's the goo. Bring it in here, import it, boom. Go over here. Now, look at this.
Bingo.
Now I can go in, call these, and have complete control over my APIs. And then, of course, because it's web API, I could go here to headers. I could hit accept. Instead of saying JSON, I could say text XML, and then I could send that and get back the exact same thing in XML, depending on how my client is. So very, very flexible, integrates with Postman. Again, choice, 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 right? Not everyone's using everyone's tools. You should be able to use the tool that you want to use as much as you want. So that is web API. Let's do the identity stuff. That's hot.
Okay.
Cool, cool, cool. No pressure.
No pressure at all.
Go, 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 go. So okay. Identity, ASP.NET Identity has been rewritten, and it's better. Why did we rewrite it?
We wrote it for a couple of reasons. First off, it was not very flexible to change. So for example, one of the first things I want to do if I'm doing identity is if I'm using ASP.NET membership today, I might want to have my own, when you log in, I want to know what Hanselman is. I want to have your first name, your last name, your address.
User profile
this
data.
Information, your profile. We gave you the profile written by the membership system wrote a blob of data to the database. You couldn't query it, you couldn't touch it, you couldn't do anything. So one of the things as part of this new membership system is if I drill into the models folder here, there's now this identity model. And inside this identity model, there's this application user. All I have to do is add whatever fields I want to this application user, run an EF migration, and I've added all those profile datas into a database table that I can actually touch and see and have access to. The next thing is, if you were a web form developer, the membership system we gave you had a lot more functionality than what we gave the MVC developer. It had ability to do password resets, a variety of things, and we decided we want those to be everywhere. So the new identity system also brings all that capability. You can do, if somebody fails their passwords too many times, we'll slow the attack down. We start doing account lockout that basically says, okay, you can't log in for 10 minutes, 15 uh-huh. minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it is.
So phrasing it differently, password validation, how you choose to take a password, what a password means to you, how you want to authenticate them, one factor, multiple factors, everything's pluggable. You don't want to store it in this database, you want to store it in that database, you've got that ability. Everything's interfaces.
Another thing we heard is people wanted claims. Claims is something that showed up in .NET 4 or 4 or 5, I'm not sure exactly which version. And the idea of claims is it's just a bucket of information that represents all that we know about you. And we've now integrated ASP.NET's membership system with the claim system, so you can do claims.
All right, impress us.
Then you can drill in here a little bit more, and you can see I've got full control of password features and stuff like that. And here's user lockout enabled by default, and then the timeout span. But where it gets really cool is you notice this register two-factor auth. So in this particular example, I've got account verification turned on. So if I create a new account, it's going to send an email message to me saying, hey,
to verify your email
address. Are you real? And it's got the ability, if I go and configure a phone number, I can actually have it do two-factor auth, where when I log in, it will actually ask me to do some of that.
Okay.
So to write that code.
I've got your phone here.
To write that code.
We have one bar.
Good. There's basically two things you have to tell us. You have to tell us we need an email service and an SMS service. And all an email service is how do we mail something? And I've got some code written here already. This is just using SMTP client, and I'm using SendGrid, which is something you can grab from the Azure store for my mail server.
Okay.
And I got this SMS service class as well, where I used Twilio to actually be able to send SMSs.
Yeah, Twilio is really, really easy. You can sign up for it, and they've got a free trial, and this will let you go and send texts.
And so after I add both of those...
And it really is that easy. I know he's uncommenting stuff to save time, but it's seriously that easy.
That was not healthy.
And all of this stuff you can get from... you probably got to shut down other versions of IIS that are running.
Where is my
best thing?
Which one is IIS?
It's not there. Can I take a look?
Go for it.
Excuse me. IIS. Task kill IM IIS Express. .com. Ooh. So you're screwed, sir. So you copy this from another location, so you're there's already someone associated
this
with that.
This is actually not copied from another location.
Let's try this. You sure you didn't?
Yeah.
Okay. You're the boss.
This feature is also available today as well. Yeah, I bet you change it doesn't help it.
Sure. So I'm just messing around. I have no idea.
This feature is available today as well as part of Update 2.
Somebody open on that port. That's a good port. Keep talking, man. People are watching.
So this is. Oh, is it?
Hey, if it works, I'm going to get cheers. If it doesn't work, then it's over for you. Hey, don't. Hey, it hasn't worked
it
yet. It hasn't worked
I was
yet.
Say,
now.
It has not worked yet.
It hasn't worked yet. I'm getting a raise or I'm getting fired. Let's watch. It's at the URL / poo. I wonder if he'll notice.
Oh no.
I like it when demos fail, don't you? Because it tells you that this isn't fake.
It's real.
But it also tells you who knows what they're talking about.
So I wanted to show that as part of this, you can see that I did get the email confirmation. So
okay.
It did come through to my account.
The URL might be wrong. Let's find out.
The URL is correct.
Does it say / poo? Let's click it. Sweet.
Wow.
I didn't know what I was doing. I was just slapping keys and pushing buttons. I have no idea what's happening.
I'm going to pave my machine.
So, of course,
this.
What's going on is he's got a rogue process that had that port open, and rather than me trying to go into TCP view, which is what I would have done to figure out what had that port open, I picked a high port that was totally made up. It's one of those things. We've all had that situation where we deployed to IIS and Skype had port 80 open, and we're like, what are you doing, Skype? Okay. And then you have to shut Skype down, and then you run it again. One of those situations.
So now that I'm logged in, I can actually come up here and I can go and add a phone number to my account.
All right. Now, he's going to type in whose phone number? Guthrie's phone number?
This is my phone number. You're welcome to call me.
Yeah. He actually does have his real phone number, but he hid it for you. It's in the web config.
And if I have bars.
Is that your phone? Oh, your security code is 2654. I don't know how to get you. Okay, 265495. Oh, and then you output it there.
I'll put it there just as cheating as well.
That is real text, though. And it came from a 352 area code, which is presumably...
So that enabled two-factor auth, that means now that if I come and log in again...
Okay. Nothing impresses bosses, by the way, than SMS integration. Because for them, it's just magic.
It didn't ask me. Anyways, but...
Oh, it didn't ask you because you...
I'm already logged in.
Because you have to go into here and say
enable.
Enable.
Dang it.
It is fun to work at Microsoft.
It is.
Except for when the part where we're evil.
There we go.
The other part is good.
Phone code. Okay. Submit. Bingo.
294-382. Again, the class for that is configurable, right? So you can do this however you want. You can make that number longer, potentially, if you wanted to. It could be a key fob. It could be a QR code. It's up to you guys how you want to implement that. So the point is, it's extensible.
And then the final thing that we could do...
In the remaining negative 2 minutes.
Negative 2 minutes.
Let's point this out. Yeah, so pointing this out, he's got Twitter off, Microsoft off, Google off, Facebook off, all right there. If you want to turn those things on, it's easy to do.
You just fill them in, press save.
With real information.
Yes, with real information.
Actually. So then if you go over there and then say external logins.
Let me just make sure I launch it again.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, you can do that. Login. Yeah, see, then it says Microsoft right there. And you can skin that any way you want. Make sense? You can then associate external logins, but if the first time you registered it was with an external login, it'll prompt you to do internals and all sorts of stuff like that.
Slides.
So.
Bitly, remember, let's go back to the Bitly and stop for a second. Make sure you grab the Bitly link. All the stuff we showed today
is up there. Yep, and it's a bundle that we can update, so if you think we missed something, tweet me and I'll fix it.
It even starts with a link to all the stuff that's new in Visual Studio 2013, update 2 for ASP.NET people.
Right. Please join us tomorrow morning. It's like 8:30 in the morning, and we're going to go through a full hour on ASP.NET vNext. And then join me. The next session is David Fowler, who is a developer at Microsoft. We've actually allowed him out. And he is going to do a 400-level session on a deep dive into the why and the how of ASP.NET MVC. The next version, vNext.
When we say ASP.NET vNext, we mean...
Everything.
ASP.NET that'll be in the next Visual Studio, not the stuff that we showed today.
We're talking about crazy
stuff.
A year from the future.
It will make you very happy.
So check that out. Here's a list of sessions. You want to take a picture of that. These are all recommendations that we'll give you. So here's your codes. All of these are good speakers. They will not waste your time. All right.
There's one more slide of.
And then here's the next one.
There's lots of ASP.NET.
Oh, you want me to go back? Sorry, the Android people are still booting up their camera. Okay, hang on. There's a guy with a BlackBerry up front who just got it working. All right, go ahead. All right, everybody feel good about that now? I'm sure the flash is working too, so excellent job on that one. Okay. PowerPoint is on the schedule builder, or you could use the internet. Okay, thank you very much. You guys are awesome. Go and visit everybody over at the booth. Lots of fun stuff going on, and this is going to be up on Channel 9. And be sure to complete an evaluation and maybe win an Xbox or gift card.